What a beautiful night to gather together on this Easter Vigil night. One of the things that we think about on this Easter Vigil when we hear so many of the Old Testament readings is that we can't understand Jesus without the Old Testament. Because Jesus isn't just a figure who came from nowhere, but he's the son of a family, and that family is Israel. And what is Israel? Well, it's God's rescue operation. Because as we know from the book of Genesis, the man and the woman sinned, and they left a terrible stain on themselves and all of their children. And so mankind finds itself locked out of paradise, in desperate need of a savior. And so what does God do? But he forms a family, a people, beginning with the person of Abraham, our father in faith, and then from Abraham's children, Isaac, then Jacob, forms a people, Israel. He sends prophets to Israel to teach them. He gives them the law. He shows them how to be faithful to his covenant. But over and over again, Israel fails. Israel fails to be the bride of God that she is. So if we don't understand this, we can't understand the meaning of the crucifix and the resurrection. One of the things I've been reflecting on this Easter that I think is so interesting is something that Pope Benedict talked about. He talked about how the people Israel, who had the Ark of the Covenant, which was so important to them, and the Ark of the Covenant had a covering on it, and the covering was called the Hilasterion. And Pope Benedict talked about how the early Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, who would have been so familiar with the Ark of the Covenant, why? Because it was in the temple where they lived. They would have prayed outside of it countless times. It would have been the place of God's presence there on earth, the most sacred space to them. Those early Jewish Christians in Jerusalem called Jesus the Hilasterion. It's very interesting. Why was that? Well, what did they do with the Hilasterion, again, which is the covering of the Ark of the Covenant? Well, beginning from the time of Moses, the people of Israel would bring an animal sacrifice to the priest, who would slaughter the animal and then sprinkle its blood on that sacred covering. And why did they do that? Well, it was thought that the contact that animal blood made with that most sacred item would bring about a reconciliation between God and man. Obviously, it wasn't a perfect or a lasting reconciliation because they had to do it over and over and over again. But when Jesus comes and he's crucified, shedding his blood, the early Christians in Jerusalem called him the new Hilasterion, the new covering of the Ark of the Covenant. Why did they call him that? It's very interesting. As the old covering brought about reconciliation between God and the people by the sprinkling of the animal's blood on the covering, well, what does Jesus accomplish? In the crucifix, which is the worst way that a person could die, in the first century, it was an ingenious form of torture invented by the Romans to make a person suffer as much as possible on their way to death. And so what we see in the crucifix is all of the filth of the world, all of the violence, the hatred, the anger, the greed, the power grabbing, the fear, the unforgiveness, all of this vile filth, all of the worst that the world has to offer was thrown upon Jesus, we could say, in the cross, and on those days leading up to the cross, the betrayal by his friend, the psychological suffering in the agony of the garden, all of the mockery and scorn he endured, the humiliation before Pilate and the high priest, and then, of course, all of the physical sufferings, the very worst that the world has to offer was thrown at Jesus. Again, we can have that image now of what the helisterion was. It was the animal blood that was sprinkled on the most sacred thing that humankind had, that Israel had, that was itself the dwelling place of God. Well, in the cross and death of Jesus, the worst that the world has to offer is thrown at Jesus. And what does Jesus do? He accepts it, takes all of it in. He dies. He goes to hell. And what happens on the third day? Why are we here tonight? It's because God raised Jesus from the dead. All of the worst that the world had, which came for Jesus, came to swallow him up, came to obliterate his goodness forever. What does Jesus do? He takes it on himself. And how does he respond to it? Not with violence, not with anger. This is how we respond often. When someone brings their hatred to us, we respond back with hatred. When someone brings their hurt to us, we respond in kind. How does Jesus respond when the worst that the world has to offer is heaped upon him? Heaped. Everything bad that the world possibly has poured over Jesus. Jesus responds with merciful love. Jesus responds to forgiveness. And what happens is that the worst that the world has to offer ends up being no match for the goodness of Jesus. Jesus, in taking upon that worst, transforms it. And his resurrection of the dead is the proof and the sign that he has been victorious once and for all over evil, sin, and death. Brothers and sisters, our constant temptation in our life is to think that the bad of our life is too much for God. Not even God can handle this situation. Not even God can handle this sin in my life. Not even God can forgive all of this badness that I find in me and around me. The crucifix is the answer, God's answer to that very question, because the crucifix is the world, is the worst that the world could offer. Isn't it interesting? And this is something that my theological hero, Bishop Barron, talks about a lot. He says, isn't it interesting that those first century Christians already We're talking about the crucifix, Jesus' crucifixion, as a sign that we should hold up for the whole world. It's an execution. It's the worst form of torture that the world knew at that time. Why did St. Paul, writing 30 years, less than 30 years after Jesus died, while the Romans were still in control, while the Romans were still crucifying people, why did St. Paul hold up Christ crucified as God's answer to the evil and death and sin that the world brings? Isn't it interesting that many, many years later, a long ways away from Jerusalem, we would gather in this place and we'd gather around the sign of the crucifix? Why? Because It's a message. Bishop Barron says it's a taunt. It's a sign to the world that there's nothing that the world has that God has not defeated. There's no form of oppression, no form of abuse, no form of violence that can rob us of God. Why? Because he has redeemed the world through the shedding of the blood of his son. The worst of the world touched the most sacred thing, not a golden covering, but the true ark, the true covenant, God himself. Brothers and sisters, again, our temptation is to think that my uncleanness will somehow messy God. If I bring God my sins, if I bring him my brokenness, I might tarnish God. But the opposite actually happens. Jesus is so clean, there's nothing unclean in our heart that can render Jesus unclean. The opposite can only happen. Jesus, when we bring him our vile, our filth, our brokenness, all of the issues that we have, our sinfulness, our anger, our own hatred, our own unforgiveness, our hurts, all of this, brothers and sisters, Jesus has already redeemed on the cross, and all we have to do is bring that to him so that he can touch it, touch us, touch me, so that we can be made clean by the one who is perfectly pure and clean. That's what the crucifix and the resurrection accomplish for us. We give thanks this day for the light that God shines in the darkness on this night, the encouragement that he comes to bring in the face of our discouragement, the hope in the face of our fears that God has won the victory. He's already done it. Let's not cease to welcome this new life that he comes to bring to us. For as he comes into us, the infinitely pure one, he can only render clean and pure. Let's ask him for that grace tonight, that he will make us a new creation as we welcome him into our hearts, our minds, our bodies this evening.